Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Ben Jarofsky Show for your Tuesday, December 17th, is just moments away. But before we get into this, we need to thank the following unions for jumping on board and sponsoring this program. First up, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 and District 8, sponsor this program, as well as the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9, and the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. We thank those unions for jumping on board and sponsoring this program. And, of course, today's Ben Jarofsky Show is brought to you by our good friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor live stream chat. Weigh in, and if you can hear us, Ben, let it rip.
Who can make the rain fall? The Candyman can. I see all these pictures of marijuana. For some reason, I think of the Candyman. You know who sings the Candyman?
Sammy Davis Jr.
The great Sammy Davis Jr. Let's have a moment of pause to reflect on his utter, total greatness. There we go. The Candyman can.
The Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. The Candyman can. It is Tuesday, December 17th, and live from the Chicago Sun-Times Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is The Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, our Chicago Reader colleague Maya Duke Masiva returns, and Troy LaRavier, president of the Chicago Principals Association. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist Benny J. Ben Jarofsky.
Hey, hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Flesnergate Tuesday, and here's wow. Great. We give a good weekend, D.
Yeah, had a great weekend.
Wait, was
two it? Days ago.
Wait, by the way, folks.
The only podcast on the planet that talks about the weekend on Tuesday.
Well, because I wasn't here Monday. I was hard at work slaving on my reader column and my reader newsletter.
It's your world. We're just living in it, buddy.
Work harder, man. Anyway, so I didn't get a chance to come on and say, hey, what a great weekend. By the way, Dr. D went down to his hometown of Alton. You have a good time in Alton, D?
Yeah, it was great.
Attaboy.
It started snowing on Sunday. We had to get the...
Snowing?
The FO, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, snow.
There's snow in Alton?
Yeah, 5 hours south. They have snow.
Wow, things I learned. Anyway, so that was the weekend. I saw a great movie. I urge everybody to Run, Don't Walk, Dark Water, Mark Ruffalo. It's a great story about corporate malfeasance and an intrepid lawyer who digs deep to find what's going on with DuPont. By the way, another movie I saw. Oh, my goodness. I didn't even get a Did I talk about this last week? I can't remember. The Report? Did I talk about that last week?
I don't think you did.
That is a great flick. It's on Amazon. Hey, I'm going to say something good about Amazon, all right? It's on Amazon. So there's something. Thank you, Mueller. And by the way, where's my Mueller report?
Oh, it's on the floor.
Things change. Where's my Mueller report? I need my Mueller report. It's like, you know, Linus with his blanket. I need my Mueller report. Anyway, The Report, great flick. I urge everybody to watch it. You know, it's getting, I'm going through this thing. This is not what I was going to talk about, Flesnergate, but on a tangent within a tangent. I'm going through this thing. I'm going to talk to Troy LaRavier about this, like reassessing Barack Obama's presidency. And I have to admit that I was just so overwhelmed with gratitude when he got elected in 2008. I thought it was such a great achievement. Many, many reasons, personal as well as political, et cetera, and so forth. And I did not really spend as much attention. Here's a confession. I'm making a confession. I did not spend as much time as I should have following what he was up to. And now I'm reading about it, been doing a lot of reading on Barack Obama's presidency, a couple books overdue at the Chicago Public Library. Thank you, Lori Lightfoot, for changing the policy so that I can be overdue and not get fined. This movie, The Report, which talks about an investigation by a Senate aide played by Adam Driver into torture that took place during the Bush administration era. But Obama administration was really resisting the release of that report, trying to redact that report on the grounds that he didn't want to look like he was being partisan. Oh, my goodness. When I heard the officials in this movie, the Obama administration officials explaining that to this Adam Driver character, who was a senatorial aide, that they didn't want to aggravate the Republicans, so they were going to bury the truth. It just, I don't know, Democrats, you might want to rethink this whole strategy of like pretending there's bipartisanship when there is no bipartisanship, because you end up undercutting the very values that distinguish you from the Republicans. Anyway, that's... I was a tangent within a tangent. Now let me get to Flesnergate.
That's the next Ben Jarofsky podcast coming. A tangent within a tangent by Ben Jarofsky.
Could you write that down? Talk to Troy about Obama administration, all right?
No, you'll remember it.
Okay. Oh, you can put my memory. Anyway. Oh, Flesnergate. All right. Now you're all mixed up. You're going, wait a minute. Is that the one where the guy was caught drinking at a bar in the Loop and making out with a woman who was not his wife? No, that's Eddie Gate. All right, keep your gates in order, listeners. This is Flesnergate. I know most of you are out there going, who? What? Never heard of Flesner. All right, I'll take some time. This is a complicated story. Maya's going to take the deep dive on it. We're going to have some, we're going to talk a bit about this. Very revealing in many ways. All right, so I'm always worried about our out-of-state listeners, D. I'm always worried about our out-of-Chicago listeners. You know what I'm saying? I'm always worried about people who are not, like, up-to-date and, like, really living and breathing every story that comes across our desk, because they don't know what the heck we're talking about half the time. Whereas most, like, Chicago reporters, like, there's one story that pops up, and they immediately think they know everything about it, and they just speak in shorthand. And then, you know, Flesner. Nobody knows who Flesner is. All right, take it one step at a time. His name is Mark Flesner. He's the City Corporation Counsel. The City Corporation Counsel is the top lawyer in the mayor's administration. Lori Lightfoot picked this guy to be in charge of the law department. If you have a visual in your mind, folks, he is the lawyer who sits next to Lori Lightfoot at city council meetings and whispers in her ear. Have you ever noticed that at a meeting or a hearing, a witness or anybody always has a lawyer whispering in their ear? This goes back to Watergate. When we do this show, Dennis is always whispering in my ear. I'm like, you go to this is the microphone, just like this one. You can see this on the thing. And so you're speaking to the microphone. My name is Lori Lightfoot. I'm the mayor of the city of Chicago. Hold on. And then she puts her hand over the microphone, leans over, usually to her left, and there's Flesner whispering in her ear. No one knows what he's saying.
Killing it on the sound effects today.
That's Corporation Counsel.
You're like a dude from Police Academy.
By the way, I could do that job. I could be the guy that whispers in the mayor's. You don't have to go to law school or where are you going for lunch, mayor? Oh, I don't know. Remember in The Godfather? Godfather 2? My favorite scene with Al Pacino's character. You know, he's testifying in that Senate hearing, and his lawyer, played by who? Robert Duvall. Come on, get it straight, young man. Whispers in his ear. So that's Flesner's job. He whispers in Lori Lightfoot's ear. Anyway, turns out that Flesner lives in Naperville. All right, why is that a big deal? Well, Naperville is a suburb outside of Chicago. It's not in Chicago, and we have something called residency requirements. If you work for the city of Chicago, you have to live in the city of Chicago. A lot of ordinary human beings who are like teachers and policemen and streets and sanitation workers, they get in big time trouble when it turns out that they don't live in the city of Chicago. They lose their job. There's investigations. The city of Chicago actually pays investigators to investigate whether a teacher lives in the city or whether the teacher. I know teachers who've been investigated, and their names will not be mentioned because I think it's a bogus law in many ways. We can talk about residence requirements all day. That's a whole other story. But here's the deal. If a teacher in the city of Chicago has to live in the city or can lose his or her job, why does not that not apply to the number one lawyer in the city of Chicago, handpicked by Lori Lightfoot for the all-important job of whispering in her ear at a city council hearing. Let's go have Taco Bell. Okay.
Oh, I love Taco Bell.
I knew that would get your engine. Taco Bell would get you.
Shredded chicken burrito.
So anyway, doesn't live in the city of Chicago. How do they know that? Because my man, Tommy Shuba. Is this guy like the hardest working reporter in the city of Chicago now? Has tag team with Fran Spielman, the legendary City Hall reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, who does a show in this very room, D. Did you know that?
Yeah.
In this very room.
Yeah, I knew that.
All right, they tag team on this story. And Shuba, man. Shuba, everybody said, wait, isn't Tom Shuba the guy that covers Reefer? Yes, that's correct. But apparently there's enough time in the day for Shuba to also do stories about where does Flesner live?
He's a hustler, baby.
He is a hardworking man, Tom Shuba, the pride and joy of Evanston, Illinois. Anyway. So it turns out that Flesner has a home in Naperville and a condo in the South Loop. He acquired the condo in the South Loop. He claims he lives there now that he's the Corporation Counsel of the City of Chicago. When Tommy Shuba first broke the story and questioned Lori Lightfoot about it, or maybe it was Fran that questioned Lori Lightfoot about it, Lori Lightfoot said very defiantly, "That's totally false. That's totally false." Humph! Guess what? Tommy Shuba and Fran Spielman were right. The guy did have a home in Naperville and a apartment or a condo in the South Loop, and he was claiming property tax exemptions on both. You can only claim one property tax exemption, folks, because you're only supposed to have one real house. So which one is it, the South Loop or the Naperville? Afterwards, do you think Lori Lightfoot said, "Tommy Shuba, I'd like to apologize to you for saying your story is totally false"? Do you think she said, "Fran Spielman, I'd like to apologize for you for saying that's totally false"? Negatory. They said, "Oops, we may have made a mistake." Turns out he does. He did claim two homeowners exemptions, but he's going to pay it back. It was just an innocent mistake, dude.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So. Here's the lesson you should learn. When a Chicago teacher has an apartment, let's say in Oak Park, and an apartment in the city of Chicago, and is discovered, and he or she is fired, that's a serious violation of the rules. And rules were meant to be enforced. And when you break a rule, you pay a consequence, because that's how it happens in America. But when the number one lawyer in the city of Chicago has a home in the suburbs and a home in the city, oh, come on. Why do they have erasers on the end of pencils? People make mistakes. Come on, Ben. Give old Flesner a break, all right? Okay, I get to. So it's a serious violation of the most important rule in the world when a teacher does it, but it's, hey, that's why pencils have erasers when the number one lawyer in the city of Chicago doesn't have it. Here, we get to the heart of Flesnergate. All right, D? We've just been on the edges of Flesnergate. Here is the real story in Flesnergate. Follow me, folks. This Tommy Shuba is such a hard-hitting reporter and such a great investigative reporter that he took the deep dive to see where did Flesner vote. And what did he discover? He discovered that in 2018, Mark Flesner, the number one lawyer in the city of Chicago, the guy who whispers into Lori Lightfoot's ear at the city council meeting.
How's that sound again?
Where you gotta go for lunch?
There you go, guys.
Let's pretend we're saying something real serious. We're not really saying anything at all. Okay. I love McDonald's Big Macs. Yeah, me too. How about Mitch Trubisky? He sucks. I know.
No sports.
Oh, sorry. Bears suck. Anyway, by the way, that's something that Lori and Lightfoot and I totally agree.
No
I hope she does.
Oh, sports.
Sorry. Anyway, where was I? Oh, Flesnergate. Going back to Flesnergate, Tommy Shuba discovered that Flesner took a voted in Naperville in the primary of 2018, the gubernatorial primary of 2018. And here is the most outrageous thing, in my humble opinion, that Tommy Shuba uncovered in his investigation and Fran Spielman uncovered in their investigation. I don't know which one uncovered it, so I should give both of them credit. When he voted, when Mark Flesner voted, follow me, folks, when Mark Flesner voted in 2018 in Naperville in the gubernatorial primary, he had a choice. He could have taken a Democratic ballot or he could have taken a Republican ballot. Guess which ballot he took, young Dennis?
Democrat.
No. This is the most serious violation of all. He took a Republican ballot. And number one, in other words, the number one lawyer for the city of Chicago, the lawyer that Lori Lightfoot chose to whisper in her ear at city council here, hey, I think we go to McDonald's. I don't know, man. Yeah, they got the pizza over at Gulliver's. Whoa, pizza? Dang, man. Let's pretend we're having a real serious conversation. Okay, okay. How about those Bears? Yeah, they suck. Anyway, the number one most important lawyer in the city of Chicago, the man who's shaping legal policy for the city on all things like unions and environment and work-related rules, is a freaking Republican. I'm like, are you for real? You're telling me there were no Democratic lawyers you could take? I know myself, D, and I'm not a lawyer. I could probably name 20 Democratic lawyers that she could have hired to be the person who sits next to her at the city council meeting and whispers in her ear, hey, what's going on? The guy is, not only that, think about this, folks. It's not like there wasn't competition in 2018 on the Democratic side. D, here you go. We were on the radio together back in 2018, you may recall. For 10 trivia points, name the Democratic gubernatorial candidates that Mark Flessner could have voted for if he had taken a Democratic ballot. Go ahead, young man. Go.
Chris Kennedy.
One.
J.B. Pritzker.
Two.
Daniel Biss.
Danny Biss. Three.
Teal Hardeman.
Whoa! How did you get Hardeman? That's awesome, dude.
Three-state guy. I don't remember him.
Come on. What's his name? His name is not three-state guy.
I can't remember his name.
I think it's Robert Marshall.
Oh, you think, huh? Yeah. Okay. Awesome. You don't know either.
That's five.
And the man I voted for in the primary, we got to get down to business, Mr. Bob Diber, the now, downstate Democrat.
Flessner, you should have voted for Diber. But I'll say this. Any one of those six candidates, including the three-state guy, would have been better than who you voted for in the Republican primary. Because your choice in the Republican primary was Bruce Rauner or Jeannie Ives. You mean to tell me that the only lawyer that Lori
Lightfoot...
Yay
for our teachers! Yay for our teachers!
Little late there, Rauner. Come on.
Rauner, come on. Get your game together. He's slow, man. He hasn't been governor in about over a year. You mean to tell me, Lori Lightfoot, that the person you thought was most qualified to be the chief corporation counsel of the city of Chicago was a guy who voted for either Jeannie Ives or Bruce Rauner? Come on. I think more investigation. Tommy Shuba, I think you should file a FOIA. Can you do a FOIA request? Find out who Flessner voted for in the 2018 gubernatorial. I think you should file a FOIA and get back to me right away. We got a great show today, everybody. Absolutely great show. Maya will be here. She's all fired up to talk about Flessnergate and other issues of the day. Troy LaRavier from the Chicago Principals Association will be here as well. I didn't even know what I'm going to talk about with Troy. I may do a little Flessnergate with Troy. May talk some politics with Troy.
That's a way to reel him in to keep listening. I don't know what I'm going to talk about.
With Troy.
There we go. Bring him in, Benny.
And by the way, Miles has returned. Miles has returned.
Miles. Get your face in the camera there. Say hey. He's back.
The great Miles Porter. He's on break from college. He said he'd stop by, and I appreciate that. Miles and I will be doing one of our famous Bulls conversations on Thursday. Joe Colley from the Chicago Sun-Times will be joining us. Dr. D. Well, the only time Dennis lets me talk about sports is we do our special Bulls bonus features where we talk about the Bulls. And Dennis actually, he tries to pretend. I'm above sports. I'm too impressed. Important and serious.
Yeah, that's me.
Turns out guy watches NBA highlights every night, folks. Just letting that one out.
House of Highlights. Check it out, everybody.
So we'll be talking with Miles on Thursday. Bulls. Oh, my God. We have so many great bonus episodes ahead of us. Mark Baser will be doing a bonus feature with us. Carlos Ramirez-Rosso will be doing a bonus feature with us. Stacey Davis-Gates will be coming into the studio. We got a lot of great guests coming up. But today, I'm focusing D.
Please.
Maya and Troy. And before we get to any of that, the young man from Alton with the news.
Oh. Hey there, how's it going, everybody? My name's Dennis. Yes, I am from Alton.
But I'm not a doctor.
Come on, Ben, give Flessner a break.
Wait, time out. Who did he vote for, in your humble opinion? He had a choice. Jeannie Ives or Bruce, what a heck of a choice.
This feller's got Ives written all over him.
I think you better clear that one up, Lori. Did your guy vote for Jeannie Ives? That's pretty embarrassing. Jeannie Ives is so far to the right. You know, she's just like, she falls off the map. She's even to the right of the Chicago Tribune editorial. Actually, I'm not quite sure she is to the right of the Chicago Tribune editorial board, D.
Well, before we get going into the news here, Brianna weighed in on the YouTube live stream chat with a great question. What is the holiday schedule for the show? Great question. Christmas Eve, we're doing a show. Christmas Day, no show. And day after Christmas, a show. So just Christmas Day, we're taking the...
And same thing the next week.
Yeah, the next week as well.
We're the hardest working podcasters in the business, man. We're taking off Christmas Day and New Year's Day, but we'll probably have something posted. The young doctor from Alton will figure something out. That brain of his, folks, is like... when it comes to podcasting. So we'll definitely have some drop on Christmas Day and New Year's Day, but for the rest of the week, we'll be live. We've got guests lined up. Like I said, Stacey Davis Gates will be in here. We have some great guests already lined up for both weeks. So yeah, we got to get down to business? We're going to get down to business.
All right, not a doctor. Let's find out what's happening in Chicago and or Illinois this afternoon. First up, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker. Surprise, surprise. Today, our governor is where he always is. Governor Pritzker's in Chicago. He's at the James...
You mean he's not in Alton?
No, he's nowhere. He's always in Chicago. Today, he's at the James R. Thompson Center to unveil the state menorah with community and faith leaders. And, you know, I'm sure the governor is ready for the new year to begin, like the rest of us here in Illinois, because with the new year comes new rules and regulations on recreational reefer. It'll be legal. Yeah, and those with low-level marijuana convictions will have their records expunged. Sadly, I don't think a lot of people without marijuana convictions really think or necessarily care about that part. No, all they want to know is how they can get them some of that legal weed come January.
That's correct.
It's like that damn chicken sandwich all over again, Ben. Well, sad news, soon to be potheads, there's a good chance you may be waiting a while because according to Chicago Sun-Times reefer writer and dear friend of the Ben Jarofsky Show, one Tommy Shuba.
Shuba's all over the place.
I'm telling you. State lawmakers are warning that there will be bumps in the road to selling cannabis, including possible shortages of the product. According to a letter addressed to the media and a letter signed by State Senators Heather Staines and Laura Fine and our good friend, State Rep Kelly Cassidy.
Casey.
Each state has implemented an adult use cannabis program, and it's had some issues related to supply shortages. Governor J.B. Pritzker's office said that the administration is actively monitoring supplies. Shuba took the deep dive here and reminds us of another plus on this 2020 reefer bill. Illinois is the only state in the country to write protections for medical cannabis patients into law.
Yeah, that's good. That's absolutely good. You should be at the top of the list if you need it for medical reasons. Of course, I would argue that everybody needs it for medical reasons because the whole point you take reefer is that life is so freaking unbearably miserable that you need a little something to help you get through it. Why do you think people drink? Same thing. But anyway, so there's a medical justification for anybody who smokes reefer.
The new state law legalizing cannabis requires dispensaries to make sure it's available to medical patients ahead of those wanting to buy it for, you know, just... sitting around at home watching YouTube, recreational use.
Yeah, recreational use, as though that's not, you know, somehow or other medicinal because life sucks. Did I tell you life sucks, Steve?
All right.
And he needs a little reefer to get through it?
Glass half full over at the Jarofsky household.
What do I get? I get through with my beloved bulls. That enables me to get through life. Lately, that's not really been helping.
To keep their priorities straight, dispensaries will face fines of up to $10,000 and could see their licenses revoked if products for patients aren't available once recreational sales start.
Wait. So time out. If a dispensary is caught selling recreational weed to, let's say, Dennis, as opposed to...
Hey, everybody.
As opposed to selling it to someone who has a medical license, then they could get fined.
Yes.
So in other words, first in line are people with the medical... Here.
That's correct.
The governor's office tells the Chicago Sun-Times that it's working to ensure supply is protected for patients who rely on it. Bad actors who violate the law will face consequences.
Bad actors?
Yeah.
You mean like, I'm trying to think of a bad actor.
When businesses open January 1st, it will be just the first phase.
Shaquille O'Neal.
Okay.
That's a bad actor. Have you ever seen Blue Chips?
All right. That is a bad actor.
Wait, what's my line again?
When businesses open January 1st, it will be just the first phase of this long-term rollout. The administration will continue to monitor supply as we implement and administer the program. All right, Ben Jarofsky. Now, we're crazy to think that this new law is going to go off without some kind of a hitch here. We may have a supply issue to iron out come January. Now, I already know you have your gripes about it, and more on that in moments. Ben wrote his latest column about this, but Ben, please try to wait until the end of the segment to gripe more about it. But Ben, you must admit, it is nice to see another plus coming out of this reefer bill. People who actually need cannabis for medical purposes are first in line to get it. Ben, in your humble opinion, will this supply shortage be a temporary problem, or should everyone who wants to enjoy it recreationally just jump on the dentist plan, just keep buying from the regular weed dealer and act like it's still illegal?
I'm a more and more an advocate of the dentist plan. And, I of course, fought vigorously for years to legalize reefer. It's outrageous that it was ever illegal, and it's doubly outrageous that the only people that ever got punished for it were basically black people, okay? So everything about it was horrific. But that said, the rollout is just I'm finding it so exceedingly annoying on so many levels that I almost wish it were illegal again without the arrests. But here's the part I don't get. Now, it's been true. I must confess. This is confession time. I must confess that I have not smoked reefer in many, many years. In fact, I don't think anybody in the studio currently, right now, was born the last time I smoked a joint. How about that? That's how long ago it was. I've got nothing but millennials.
The only person
there
I've met that brags about being old. But go ahead. I'm old. Isn't that cool?
So it was a long time ago. But back in the day, I was known to smoke a joint or two or three or four and purchase stuff. And I have to tell you, I have a confession to make. I got to tell you this, D. Never once in all those years of the 70s when I was smoking reefer like a chimney, all right, usually out on the rocks. That's the best place to smoke marijuana, ladies and gentlemen, along the rock. Is it going to be illegal to smoke marijuana along the lakefront, D?
I'm looking. I'd imagine so.
Maya, is it going to be illegal?
Yeah, you can't be out in public.
That sucks, man. Anyway,
people are going to be doing it
anyway.
I know.
It was the best place back in the 70s to smoke. You sit out there, you listen to some Tower of Power, man, you're grooving on that reefer. Anyway.
That dry 70s reefer.
Wait, first of all, you weren't even around in the 70s. I'm going to defend 70s reefer. You weren't even there at the time, Maya. You weren't even born yet. So how can you assail the delicious reefer of the 70s? Anyway, here's the point. Never once did I even experiencing anything remotely like a shortage. I never heard anybody like who sold reefer go, sorry, Ben, I'm low on supplies. It may be a couple of weeks. How come the state of Illinois can't get reefer if I got it tons of it in the 70s, D? Please answer that.
Well, you had a good dealer back in the day. I've had guys, hey, man, I don't have any right now. Leave me alone.
Are you asking seriously?
Yeah.
Why there's going to be a shortage? Because they can only sell the stuff that's grown here. And they're not going to have enough. Like, it takes like a few months for the plant to actually mature and produce enough. You know,
I see.
To
There's
sell.
The explanation.
So
okay, it's a good explanation.
They can't.
Oh, that's a good explanation. I guess my guy back in the 70s didn't have to worry about where it was going. Okay, good explanation, Maya.
All right, now on to the city news here.
Man, you should go to work for the city's law department as a spokesperson because you are really good with explanations. Go ahead.
On to the city news. It looks like the mayor has marijuana on her mind as well.
Oh, yeah. I saw this story. I'm going to be writing about this in the Reader.
On Monday, Mayor Lightfoot addresses Ben's big issue with the legalization of recreational marijuana. Mayor Lori Lightfoot said Monday that she is, quote, very serious about the city growing its own recreational marijuana to give give minorities a chance to learn the business and share the wealth, a plan the governor's office later praised. Lightfoot said up to $15 million generated by tax increment financing could be used as seed money for the plan to open a, quote, cooperative cultivation center.
Is that a joke? Seed money? Get it?
Oh, wow. Catch him at Zany's this weekend, guys. He's got a million of them. Good Lord. She said the idea is aimed at overcoming the biggest impediment to minority ownership, access to capital. I'll have some quotes from Lori here. Let me just read a few. Quote, this is a very, very expensive business to get involved with. The basics to be a cultivator requires about a $13 million to $15 million investment. There are not a lot of people that have that, particularly in a market market that a lot of banks and traditional lenders won't touch. I think the only way to really crack this nut, no weed joke there, Ben, just crack this nut. Sorry. The only way to really crack this nut is for the city to invest its own resources to get engaged, get diverse entrepreneurs involved in the most lucrative part of the business, which is cultivation.
All right. First of all, I think of all the things that the city of Chicago has spent TIF dollars on, I would put at the top of the list reefer. So I'd say reefer is probably a better use of TIF dollars than, let's say, just thinking of one thing that pops to mind, Lincoln Yards development. Would I rather see the city spend its TIF dollars helping black people get involved in the sale of legalized reefer? Yes. So I'd rather see it. So I'm totally for this expenditure of TIF dollars, way ahead of Lincoln Yards. This is what I'll be writing about in the Reader coming up. One of the many things I'll be writing about in the Reader. We have a special reefer issue coming
yeah,
up.
Yeah, and I've got a good story coming up too.
But you're not going to tell your story because...
Yeah, it's going to be a surprise.
It's a surprise. But anyway, I applaud the mayor. I just want to point something out. They're proposing to spend $15 million with an M on helping black people get a foot up in the sale of recreational marijuana. And they've already approved $1.3 billion with a B for development.
That's billion with a B.
Yes, thank you, Lori Lightfoot. Billion with a B, $1.3 billion with a B for the development of Lincoln Yards. Isn't that interesting when it comes to finally giving a little justice on the issue of recreational reefer or reefer in general for black people who were unfairly prosecuted all these years in the war on drugs? There's only $15 million, but when it comes to developing an already gentrifying neighborhood that doesn't need a handout in the first place, there's $1.3 billion with a B. Just wanted to point that out, D.
More where that came from on Ben's latest Chicago Reader.
No, I haven't written it yet. It's coming out this Friday.
That's what I'm saying. Just be on the lookout
for it. But I wrote the draft
it.
On the train coming in today.
Oh, there we go. That's... Didn't really have
good to know. Good to know that's how you do your writing these days, Ben.
That bit of honesty got you nowhere.
Well, but, you know, I mean, a writer, wherever your writers write.
But there you are. We'll keep you posted on these stories as today's program rolls along. Don't go anywhere, because coming up after this short little break, our Chicago Reader colleague, Maya Dukmasov, is here. We're going to be talking all things local politics. It's the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
The Ben Jarofsky Show is supported by Northwestern University's part-time master's program in literature and liberal studies. Students learn from dynamic and diverse faculty as they build advanced skills for critical analysis, writing, and research. Evening classes are held on Northwestern's Evanston and Chicago campuses. The spring quarter application deadline is January 15th. Learn more at sps.northwestern.edu/masters. Read the Chicago Reader to get up to speed on what's what in Chicago. Culture, food, arts and entertainment, weekly concert listings, weekly event listings, the environment, travel. I can continue, but you get the point. And for all of you Chicago political junkies, raw weekly columns on real city politics from Maya Dukmasova and our very own Ben Jarofsky. The Chicago Reader, free to the public in newsstands throughout the city and online at chicagoreader.com. Read it now and be a more informed Chicagoan.
Hey, everybody, what you're about to hear are the piano stylings of Jeff Manuel. Man, listen to Jeff go. Jeff Manuel has been playing piano around Chicago for years. He's played for conventions, for celebrities, played in basement bars with blues bands. He's played at prestigious social clubs, fine restaurants, and in the intimacy of private homes. Book Jeff Manuel at jeffmanuelpianist.com. Don't worry, I'll spell his name at the end of this commercial. You know what Chicago Magazine said? They said that Jeff Manuel is, quote, as comfortable with Chopin as he is with Cole Porter. He's excellent, and his performance is joyous. He offers an elegant stream of compositions and interpretations that entertains the mind but won't hurt the ears. To hear more of Jeff Manuel's work and to book Jeff for your next event, go to jeffmanuelpianist.com. I'm going to spell it out for you, people. J-E-F-F. M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, U, E, L, P, I, A, N, I, S, T.com. Take it away, Jeff Manuel.
Commercial break over. Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Rule number one of podcasting, do not eat a cookie, delicious though it may be, right before you come back to the air. Maya, these cookies are absolutely delicious.
Thank you.
Go, what can I say? I'm a great cook.
They are delicious.
Maya brought us cookies, everybody.
Yes, Maya brought us cookies. Other guests, all right? Come on. Hey, bring some. It's that time of year.
Mark Sims always brings you something.
I love Mark Sims. But he only comes, like, he's so busy. Ben, I can only come Tuesdays, and I'm really busy. Anyway, yes, he does bring lots of stuff, and then Dennis hides it because he doesn't like when we eat on the show. Anyway, Maya, what's on your mind today? First of all, thank you very much for the cookies. They're mm-hmm. absolutely delicious. Miles is eating one as well. And Dennis is eating one. So when we were together on, was Sunday, Maya and I were at the Reader Christmas party. Thank you, Tracy Bang, for that great Christmas party.
Mm-hmm.
That story, the story about Bill McCaffrey was breaking. I didn't even know about it yet because mm-hmm. I'm not a hip on Twitter. And within 24 hours, 48 hours, the story about a publicist who got fired from the city's law department had developed into a story about Mark Flessner, the head of the law department, who apparently isn't quite sure whether he lives in the city of Chicago or Naperville. Now they're swearing up and down that it's the city of Chicago, which means that it's legal as opposed to violating the city's residency requirement. You were ready to take the deep dive on this story right there and then on Sunday. You were fired up about it. So explain, though. I already talked a little bit about Flessner at the start of the show. The little part of the story, the quirk of the story that I really appreciated, that he voted in the Republican primary of 2018 when he took a Republican ballot in 2018 when he was living in Naperville. Mm. Apparently, J.B. Pritzker was just too radical for him to vote for. So you have a lot to say about McCaffrey. So why don't you take the time to take a deep dive into this one?
Okay.
Maya, actually, before you do that, we need you to confirm for our YouTube live stream audience that these cookies do not have marijuana in them.
No, they do not have marijuana on them.
There you go,
them.
Live stream.
I don't know how to do that.
What, cook with marijuana?
Yeah, that's like a whole other thing. You know, I never, I was never one of those people. So, anyway, but if our YouTube listeners are indulging, I can recommend these cookies. It's a wonderful snack in that context. Anyway, so the situation with this whole ordeal is very strange. So Bill McCaffrey is not someone the general public probably knows or has ever heard of, but this guy has been in the realm of communications and doing PR for the city of Chicago since like the early 2000s. I actually pulled up his LinkedIn while I was on my way over here. Get a load of this resume. So he went to Columbia College, local guy.
Columbia College here in the city of Chicago.
Yeah. So worked as a reporter, as a stringer for the Associated Press for some years until 2005. And in 2005, he comes to the city and becomes director of public affairs for the Chicago Department of Consumer Services, which is a department that I feel like I've barely ever heard anything about. All right, but he's there for a couple of years. From there, he moves into a much, in my opinion, more significant position in the city, which is that he becomes the director of public affairs for the Department of Buildings. Mm-hmm. All right. There he stays for 4 years through the tail end of the Daley administration, of the Richard M. Daley administration. And then he goes to be the deputy director of communications for the mayor's office. Mm. All through Rahm's first term.
So, time out. So, he was at the buildings at the end of Daley, and then when Rahm came in, he moved over.
Well, it seems like it says that he moved over to the mayor's office in 2010, so maybe he was doing double duty for a little bit. Yeah, but then he's there at the mayor's office until July of 2014. So, all through Rahm's first term.
Got it.
All right. From there, he goes to CPS for about a year, and he becomes the head of communications at CPS, 2014-2015. Mm. All right. And then in 2015, in October of 2015, he moves to the law department.
Okay.
Now, October of 2015, if you recall, is a very hot time at the city law department. This
Explain
is a time
why.
Because this is when the Laquan McDonald tape was revealed.
Mm-hmm.
So the Laquan McDonald tape was released to the public right around Thanksgiving.
And just really briefly,
November
tell
of 2015.
People, there may be some listeners from out of state don't know the significance of Laquan McDonald
tape. All right,
tape.
Well, I mean, at this point, I feel like, you know. All right, so in October of 2014, Chicago police officers, a group of Chicago police officers converge on the southwest side of Chicago in response to a call about a teen supposedly committing burglaries and popping people's tires with a knife. They arrive. This is a 17-year-old boy named Laquan McDonald, and basically they intercept him in the middle of a street, and one of the cops, Jason Van Dyke, shoots Laquan McDonald 16 times, kills him as Laquan McDonald was trying to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this has been like the most significant news story probably of the last decade in the city of Chicago, if not more. But the city kept this under wraps for a year, basically. Mm-hmm. They quietly settled with the family of Laquan McDonald and paid them off, and through a settlement, they, you know, kept the story out of the press, and it was some journalism work by our friend Jamie Calvin that revealed that actually this was not, the shooting did not happen as the city had presented it, that in fact that this was like a basically an execution in the middle of the street. And once Jamie Calvin published the story about the autopsy results that had until then not been seen, another journalist, a freelancer and activist, Will Calloway, basically sued to try to get the video from the Chicago Police Department of what happened that night. So they made a FOIA request. It was denied, you know, under the, like, the excuse was that there was pending litigation or whatever. And they took it to court. And in October of 2015, October, November of 2015,
yeah,
is when the court decided that the tape was going to have to be released.
A judge ruled that in favor of the FOIA request by Calloway. Now, just to think about this, what Maya is saying, every step of the way, the law department was involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
Every step of the way, from at the very beginning, there's a shooting. The initial story is that Laquan McDonald was acting in a threatening manner toward the police officer. Jason Van Dyke was going toward him, and Jason Van Dyke had to shoot him to protect himself. That
right.
was the original story.
So, yeah, I don't want to get too bogged down into what the details of the Laquan McDonald shooting were. But the important thing is that, yes, the law department was involved the mm-hmm. whole way through. And the tape was released right around Thanksgiving, November 24th, mm-hmm. 2015. So Bill McCaffrey starts at the law department in October of 2015. Like within a month before this tape is released, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not he becomes the director of communications for the law department in that moment. Now, not surprising, given that this guy has a lot of experience with the city, has been through a lot of various crises and unsavory stories for the city, has apparently handled that to the city's satisfaction, to the satisfaction of two different mayoral administrations. So he starts in October of 2015 and stays there all the way until Lori Lightfoot's inauguration, basically, almost. He's there, this says he's there until April of 2019. And after that, I actually don't know why, because he was at the law department until he was fired this past weekend. So I don't know why the dates are what they are. But anyway, point is that he's done some. I remember last year, there was a moment when the buildings department no longer had a press person, and Bill was covering for them because I was calling him for buildings related stuff. So, but he's been the law department guy for years now, and weathered a lot of really, really difficult, politically difficult moments for for the authorities in that job. So what happened this weekend was we find out over the weekend that Bill McCaffrey has been fired. And the story that emerges from the mayor's office is that this had something to do with unethical and unprofessional behavior on his part. Now, the other thing that emerges is that some anonymous source close to McCaffrey, supposedly, this was in the Sun-Times story that I read, I think, or maybe been the Trib, but the counter story that's supposedly coming from McCaffrey's end of things is being communicated by an anonymous source that's being cited in the press. So the counter story being that Bill McCaffrey was bringing up some kind of ethics issues to the mayor's office, and he got fired afterwards. So on Friday, last Friday, he was escorted out of off the job by police.
Wow, that's deep.
Now, this is a guy who's put in, like, you know, many, many years with the city. To be, like, escorted off the job on a Friday by police, that's, like, a kind of firing that's, like, you want people to know this guy was fired. Mm-hmm. I told you this at the party. Like, it almost feels like, you know, it's sort of like the Eddie Johnson thing. Like, it feels like retribution when somebody's fired in such a, you know, intense way.
Intense.
So over the weekend, we had not heard this whole story about Flessner because that was taking shape even through Sunday, as far as I understand. So what came out yesterday? This is yesterday's paper you've got, or today's?
This is today's newspaper recounting what happened yesterday.
So. So what's emerged is that reporters were digging around this issue of residency, that for those who don't know, if you work for the city of Chicago, you're supposed to live in the city of Chicago, no matter what level of the food chain you're at. If you receive a paycheck from the city, there's a residency requirement. You're supposed to live in the city. So what reporters were investigating was that apparently Mark Flessner has this home in Naperville and a condo in the city of Chicago. And for several years in the past, he's claimed a homeowner's property tax exemption on both of the properties. Mm-hmm. Now, according to Illinois state law, you cannot claim a homeowner's exemption anywhere except for the place you live. So since you cannot live in two different places, you can't claim more than one exemption. Mm-hmm. So apparently it came to light somehow that he was claiming more than one exemption, and people were sniffing around and asking about it.
Tommy Shuba, in particular, the Chicago Sun-Times reporter, was one who broke it, and Fran Spielman broke the story. Go ahead.
Right. So on Monday, I believe, or on Sunday, Lori Lightfoot was having a press conference in relation to the public libraries now being open on Sundays. Mm-hmm. And she was asked at this press conference about this residency issue. And at first, what she had said, my understanding is that she had at first said that there was no issue with him claiming exemptions in two different places.
She said it was totally false.
Right. And then later, it was the new kind of line that came out of her office was that there was a mistake. He made a mistake, and there was an
Flessner
accident.
Made a mistake.
Yes, that he accidentally claimed these exemptions in two different places, and that he would be paying back the money he erroneously claimed.
Because mistakes happen.
Right. So what's so interesting is that Bill McCaffrey is fired for allegedly behaving in an unethical manner on the eve of it coming out that his boss is doing something not just unethical, but, I mean, potentially illegal. Like, it's
illegal.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, you know,
potential out of that. You cannot claim homeowner exemptions on more than one property. You only have one home. The homeowner exemption is intended to protect property tax homeowners from from property taxes are too high. So they give you an exemption. They give you a break that you can take advantage of for the home that you live in. The notion is it's not an investment property. It's a place you purchase to live in. So you should not be unduly taxed. So they give you this break. So
it's like $10,000, I think.
Well, it's an allowance that you deduct from the amount that you pay. Whatever. The point is that you get a break, but you can only use it once,
Maya. $1,000.
And because if you because you only have one home.
Right.
Otherwise, it's a vacation home or an investment property or like a Airbnb thing you got going. But you can only have one home, and having a condo in the South Loop to enable you to get around city residency requirements does not allow.
No. It would be the neighborhood. The condo in the South Loop would not be a problem for the residency requirements. The Naperville house would be.
Right. And what I'm saying is that the homeowner exempt, there's no provision in the homeowner exemption that says, oh, you can claim two homeowner exemptions if one of them is to get around the residency requirement for the city of Chicago. So you can have a South Loop condo that says, I live in the city of Chicago. If you buy a South Loop condo to say that you actually live in the city of Chicago, then you got to give up your homeowner's exemption in Naperville. And then the Naperville property becomes something else completely. So essentially,
what I'm betting is that homeowner's exemption is a little juicier for the Naperville house. They've got higher taxes up there, I'm pretty sure.
I do not know. In DuPage County, I do not know. I don't know. I don't know what the...
Naperville School District, it's probably taking a lot more money out of your property tax bill than the CPS.
Fair enough.
Look, here's the deal, though. The thing that's so interesting about all of this is that Bill McCaffrey is fired in a way that besmirches his reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Say what you want about, and I'll say what I want about PR people that work, who are taxpayer paid to spin stories that are protecting people in power in the city government. Okay, I don't even think this job should exist. But in my experience and in the experience of a lot of other people who work in media in the city of Chicago, and we were having this conversation with our colleague Deanna Isaacs on Sunday, who had the same opinion as I do, Bill McCaffrey was a decent dude.
Yeah. Now
it's like saying the shark with the least sharp teeth. You know what I mean? Like, it's like he was doing a lot of covering. His job was to cover for the city before the public, public scrutiny. I don't know. He never struck me personally as someone who, he always seemed to me like a decent person who played it straight, who knew when you call him up, first of all, he was very responsive and very good at his job. So he was an expert at manipulating reporters and public opinion. He was very good at it. And part of, I think, what made him good at it is because he's a smart guy. He was interesting to talk to. And he just made you feel like he was doing whatever he could for you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'd call him about stuff and he would make it clear that he thought whatever was going on was bullshit. But, you know, for this or that reason, this is all he can tell you. And this is what the official line is.
But he would say that off the record.
I had multiple situations with him over the years where I had very long conversations with him, much longer than I've had with any other people that do flack work for the city, about the ethics or the problems with something that was happening. And it was clear that he understood what the issue was, but he's got the job he's got. So that's his job.
Well, the reason
he was never defensive.
The reason why I asked you, and I thank you for doing it, going back and telling the history of Laquan McDonald, is because the law department was the key player in all that. It oversaw absolutely every aspect of the Laquan McDonald case from the moment that it happened. So people would turn to the law department. What happened? Okay.
Well, people would also turn to the police department.
Absolutely.
Which at the time was outsourcing its PR work to the FOP and to Pat, what's his name? The guy.
I know who you're talking
Pat
about.
Pat Camden, who just was lying to people.
Right. Okay.
Who was just who would stand up in front of cameras and talk on behalf of the police department and just tell lies for years.
Okay. And so here's the problem. The problem is that, the law department, the police department, the city of Chicago allowed the spokesperson for the Fraternal Order of Police to be the public face on the city's explanation.
And that was the primary person who was putting the spin out there about Laquan McDonald.
But the city at never point, in defense of the Fraternal Order of Police, the city of Chicago never stepped in and said, We should be saying what happened here. We should be the official spokespeople, not the fraternal order. They were more than happy, the city of Chicago was, under Mayor Rahm and his law department, to let the fraternal order
police.
Well,
and it worked, because look what happened. Everybody knows about all the lies Pat Camden told, and nobody's talking about the, you know, what Bill McCaffrey did in this picture.
All right, so we're moving into when McCaffrey comes to the law department. The law department is the one that settles the, well, it wasn't even a lawsuit. They agree to pay out $5 million or whatever it was to Quan McDonald's family so that there is no lawsuit. It's approved. The settlement deal is approved by the Chicago City Council. At the time, there was already talk that there was a tape out there that existed, and the city of Chicago did not reveal what was on the tape. The city of Chicago did not reveal the tape, released the tape. And as you pointed out, they fought the release of the tape. This is something that the law department was overseeing from start to finish.
Right.
And so it's so bizarre.
No, but here...
It's like all those things are happening, and the guy is fired 2 years later for what?
This is my point.
Yeah.
This guy is very good at his job. This is the guy that you put in charge of your law department when the shit hits the fan with the Laquan McDonald tape. All right. So that is like a person that if you want a guy like that on your team, right? And sure enough, like two mayoral administrations, you know, he made it through Daley from the early 2000s, made it through both of Rahm's terms. This guy's good at his job. Mm-hmm. And he gets fired now for supposedly doing something unethical and unprofessional a couple of days before it comes to light that his boss is, you know, apparently, you know, doing something that may be possibly unethical and unprofessional and illegal,
yeah.
You know, and who loses his job? Because in other situations like this, these news stories about this Flessner situation, they keep bringing up the fact that, like, there was like the director of the aviation department who stepped down because it was found out that she was claiming, she was not living in the city of Chicago. Mm-hmm. So in past instances, like, people have left their jobs or lost their jobs over this. Mark Fressler still has his job,
yeah.
Who was, by the way, like the head of the Lori Lightfoot for Chicago, like, fundraising operation. Those people are like the most important people to the person that gets elected. So this guy doesn't lose his job, but Bill McCaffrey loses his job and loses his job in a way that will make it very hard for him to work again.
Mm-hmm. And there's a couple issues that you've raised. I really want to delve into. One is, what do publicly funded PR people, what's their worth and value?
What is it, like $125,000?
That's not what I mean. I mean, their worth and value to the public. And then the response that Lori Lightfoot gave, when reporters ask questions to raise issues and tweet it.
I want to just read this. So this is in the Sun-Times story. So the reporters were asking about, you know, McCaffrey being fired and challenging her on that at that press conference that was supposed to be about the libraries being open on Sundays. And she said, I'm now reading the Sun-Times story. This is the same thing you had on your, in front of you there, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
A visibly angry Lightfoot also scolded the news media for taking information from anonymous single sources and running with it in defense of McCaffrey, whom she called your buddy.
Yeah.
I've seen the Twitter play of some of you over the course of the weekend. This is a quote from Lightfoot. And I have to say, I'm disappointed that on the basis of a single source, unnamed, that you all are putting this out as if it's true, Lightfoot said. Obviously, Bill McCaffrey was your buddy. But I hope that we are not getting to a new standard in media here in Chicago where we have a bunch of unnamed sources. There's no other information provided. They're throwing out a bunch of chum on the water and people are biting at it as if it's the truth. Because the things that have been put out that I've seen are demonstrably false and could easily be proven so, could be proven so with a little bit of diligence, which I would assume reporters who are serious about this would do.
Your thoughts on that?
I mean, why does Mark Flessner still have a job?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what, like, how high up the food chain do you have to be to where claiming double property tax exemptions is like something that you say, oh, I'm sorry, like I'll pay it back and face no other consequences, you know?
They
also keep throwing it out there that he hasn't even paid his property taxes yet and hasn't claimed any exemptions in 2019. I don't know if they're saying he hasn't paid them, but he hasn't claimed any exemptions in 2019. But I guess like the scenario that I'm imagining for all of this is that, because it's also like, why, like you hire a spokesperson when they fuck up what they tell the public in that sense. Like you hire a spokesperson when they fail. You fire a spokesperson when they fail to toe the line on what the story is that you're putting out. When they say the wrong thing. When they fail in the spin doctoring that they're supposed to do out there. Mm-hmm. We hadn't even heard the story about Flessner when McCaffrey was fired. Mm-hmm. So was it that, I mean, maybe McCaffrey was the one who leaked the information about the taxes. Maybe it was that. Maybe it was that reporters started calling him about this and he rolled up to his boss and said, like, what are we going to do about this? This seems like a problem for you. And, you know, mm-hmm. Flessner and Lightfoot and her people got defensive about it. And they, you know, but I don't know. She keeps saying that he was behaving in an unprofessional manner. Like, what can a PR person who's survived this long in the city covering for so many horrendous scandals mm-hmm. and excusing all manner of like ridiculous city policies and decisions, what is the unprofessional conduct he could? I also, just in general, everything I've personally experienced or heard about the guy is that this guy's like a decent guy.
Yeah.
So what kind of unprofessional behavior could it possibly be?
Okay. You've raised a lot of questions. I just got to put this out there. I didn't know him. I can't recall if I'd have to go back and look at emails to see if he even had an exchange with him all these years. But I have my issues in general with Flax for the city, because in the abstract, and I realize as soon as I say this, it's going to sound very idealistic and naive. In the abstract, their job is to provide public information. So the public has a question.
No, they're
right. But in the abstract, right? But the way it works in the city of Chicago, they essentially either block public access to information that the public should have, sort of like the FOIA law, or they put spin out there that confuses the public, misleads the public, and essentially is acting as a public relations arm of whoever the mayor is.
It's not just the city of Chicago. This is how PR works everywhere.
This is how PR works everywhere. So, and I'm particularly, when it's a publicly funded apparatus like government, the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois, I understand how the world works, Maya, so I don't make a big deal about it, but it is a little annoying, and particularly when you're a reporter dealing with someone who's being a complete jerk and making your life more difficult, it just aggravates the situation knowing that you, as a resident of the city of Chicago, pay this person's salary.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, based on what you said and what other reporters have tweeted out, this gentleman was as professional as he could be, as helpful as he could be, within the confines of that role that he has, knowing that his job, he's an at-will employee, he could be fired at any minute mm-hmm. without recourse. So he has to play the political game of his bosses, and his bosses have changed. As you pointed out, went from Rom to Lori.
But the notion that this is our buddy.
Yeah,
like,
that's the point.
That's like so insulting, because like we're not, I mean, there's like two PR people who work for local government who I would say anything positive about on a human level, and Bill McCaffrey is one of them. And like, even so, I would never describe this as if he and we are on the same side of things. Like, he's not our buddy. Like, his job is to keep information from us and to put spin on information that's most favorable to the city. Like, it's an adversarial relationship, always. He just always treated it with the sort of understanding that he knows he's playing a game and he knows he's playing a game. And so, I don't know, he just seemed to me like the kind of person that was like, you know, at least didn't treat you like you didn't clearly know what he was doing, you know, and which is more than I can say for like most other PR people that represent the city. So, you know, he's not our buddy. Like, in fact, I think maybe she's defensive about this and saying stuff like this because she doesn't like the fact that, like, there are reporters in the city who are coming out and saying positive things about the guy. Like, which is, you know, pretty astounding.
Yeah. By the way, I have to point out, it is I always get defensive when elected officials beat up on the press. I just it's an instinctive reaction I have, so I'm just,
I mean, what do you think we were supposed to get? All we do is beat up on them all day long.
Yeah, so okay, so you know, they get their opportunity to come back. Fair enough. But I do get a lot. I'm just putting that out there. I'm a human being, but I just want to point out that Lori Lightfoot immediately counterattacked the press and saying that on Twitter they were putting out erroneous statements that could be easily proved wrong if you just did a little investigation. She's the one who put out the biggest erroneous statement when she told the press that Tom Shuba and Fran Spielman got it wrong when they said, oh boy, was claiming two homeowners
when
exemptions.
When she said it was completely false that he
totally
was claiming
false.
Two exemptions. Yeah.
That's totally false. So on one level, I'm impressed that Lori Lightfoot could, at the same press conference, you know, denounce the press for putting out false statements while
putting out false statements.
You got to give her credit. I mean,
honestly, though, like this whole situation with the firing, like he must have done something to really piss him off. And I really can't think of what it could have possibly been other than either he leaked the story about Flessner, or when he got called about it, he like didn't deny it hard enough or didn't handle questions about it with enough, you know, I don't know, force, or just didn't put them off the scent intent, like, mm-hmm. well enough, you know, it just feels like that was maybe something that was going on. Now, that's not even based on one anonymous source. That's literally conjecture. I'm just shooting the shit here, but it just seems weird. Seems weird.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you that it's one of those stories that I think that most people out in the world are not paying attention to, obviously, or if they do, they don't understand why it matters. It matters to reporters who've dealt with McCaffrey and have an appreciation for how he did his job, which is, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, you know, buddy. I don't think there's a conflict of interest.
It's very hard to have an appreciation for someone who does a job you have no appreciation for. I mean, there's, all jobs have dignity, but we live in a sick world that makes this a job. Like,
talk about that. Go a little more.
I mean,
you said that
it's the same thing you said. It's like, it's like we're paying, our tax dollars are going to fund someone whose job it is to like prevent access to information, to spin information, to protect people in authority. I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, well, what would a world without PR people look like? And I mean, this is like a relatively recent thing. This is like, you know, I don't think that there were like, it was like standard practice to have communications managers for municipal government until probably like what, like the 70s or the 80s or something like that. You know, it's like if you get elected to do this work, if you get appointed to do this work, like you should be making your own explanations. Mm-hmm. But, you know, of course, then, you know, it's an issue of like how much can one person take on, and you need assistance and you need to delegate responsibilities and blah, 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 blah. And there's a way you talk to the media and whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. You should have David Axelrod on here talking about this. But like it's a job that it's also quite sad that often this is a job that's done by former reporters. And if we didn't live in a world in which the media was like constantly shrinking and journalism was devalued, like maybe they wouldn't have to be going to do PR. But I think that it's just a, yeah.
Well,
and I think a lot of people struggle probably personally with doing the work too.
Well, I can tell you, just dealing with the city of Chicago, because that's what I mostly dealt with, not dealt with the federal level or the state level. The big change with how the press handlers, that's what they were. We've always had press handlers since in the city of Chicago. They existed under Richard J. Daley. When I first came to Chicago, started reporting, they existed under Jane Byrne, and they existed under Harold Washington. But there was a fundamental change that occurred soon after Richard M. Daley took office. And I remember I lived through it, Maya. And Daley did a press, did a study of press operations, or he had some PR firm do a study of press operations, and they came to the conclusion, only in Chicago, that the most ineffective thing about press communications, as it was practiced by Harold Washington and Gene Sawyer, is they weren't streamlined. They wanted absolutely everything, all messaging, to go out through the mayor's office. That was Mayor Daley's invention, and Mayor Rahm took it to another degree. Everything has to be funneled through the mayor's office. So in the old days under Harold Washington, if you had, and under Jane Byrne, if I had a question about city policy, I would call the appropriate press officer, and that person, I know this just sounds so bizarre, would give me whatever information they had on the issue. And under Mayor Daley, suddenly I encountered this. Let me get back to you. And so let's say I called someone at the school board, the press officer at the school board, to ask about school policy. It's like, let me get back to you.
It's interesting. And so that I've question, never not lived in a world in which let me get back to you is the first thing you hear from a public information officer.
So it would be like they would go to the mayor's office and tell the PR handlers and the spin people. The mayor, Troy LaRavier, has walked into the building. So here's, I'll give an example. He could comment on this when he comes on. When Troy LaRavier was let go from his job as a principal, and I called the Chicago Public Schools for a comment. Now this is what it's evolved to. They wouldn't even call me back.
Yeah,
I would get a very brief message emailed to me from their press person. So there couldn't even be a give or take. Back in the day, I would call a press person. We would actually have a give or take, and it sounds ancient history, on the record. And then if they felt like there was something they really wanted me to know, but they didn't want to be attached to it, well, let me go off the record on this thing. But
this is what it was like to talk to Bill, in my experience.
Okay.
There are people, I mean, being at the Reader, I don't know if you experienced this, or maybe this is just my relatively unimportant stature in the ecosystem of journalists here, but like, there are certain people that never return my calls. Like, all through the Rahm Emanuel administration, I never got a response from a single communications person from the mayor's office. I have never not gotten a call back from Bill on any story, no matter how small and no matter how like green I was in my career.
Well, you were probably paying a price for me because it's been that way with me and Mayor Rahm from the get-go. And it was that way with me and most of Mayor Daley's PR people.
It makes it easy when they don't call you back, because then, you know, you don't have to worry about putting their bullshit into the story. But Bill, this is what I'm saying. He's good at his job, because then he like developed this personal rapport with you. Mm-hmm. And then you were like, well, you know, he clearly put in the time and effort to tell the city side of things and to level with you. And then you felt kind of, you know, you felt like it would be like your job was to also give him the space in the story to say what he's got to say. This is why, like, it's just wild to me that what could he have possibly done that they want to sacrifice someone who's that good at their job?
I don't know. But
it's wild.
These are public servants, publicly paid. And essentially, for the last 30 years, various mayors of the city of Chicago, from Daley to Rom, to Lori, have turned this into a message machine. So there's a message of the day. So if Troy LaRavier is fired, there's a message about Troy LaRavier being fired. If, Bill McCaffrey is fired, there's a message about Bill McCaffrey being fired. If you discover that the Corporation Counsel actually lives in Naperville when he's supposed to live because of residency requirements in the city of Chicago, there's a message.
Maybe he went off message. That's what they call it. You're going off message.
Going off message.
Yeah.
And
that's an Axelrod term. Yeah.
And that's why I realize what I'm about to say is naive. I realize what I'm about to say is unduly idealistic. I realize what I'm about to say does not exist in the real world, but I'm going to say it anyway. That's why I find it so offensive that public employees whose job it is to disseminate public information about what's going on have turned into message shapers for the public officials who elected them. And they're at-will employees who could be fired at the whim of the mayor if they go off message. And they're not supposed to do that. But, you know, it's like everything else. It's like, oh, Ben, you're being idealistic. Oh, Ben, that's the way the world works. And I just have always...
We should probably put it out there that if Bill McCaffrey wants to talk to someone about what really happened to him, we're here for you, Bill. Tell us your story.
All right.
Get a PR person to represent you.
Why do you think he's not talking?
That's Troy LaRavier.
No, he's somebody's talking. Whoever that anonymous source is, I trust Fran and
Tommy Shuba
enough that whoever that anonymous person is, it's not just some random person in a place to call. They know who that is, and they feel like person knows.
You're saying why he's not talking publicly? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, you say this. I mean, I was going to bring this on after Maya left, after we take a break, but Troy LaRavier is in the studio. This was a big issue, Troy, when they fired you. And there were all these whispering things and people putting stuff out there.
Well, how long did it take you to start talking in response to their story about you? Because it's been lonely since Friday.
I was kind of immediate with some stuff, but my attorneys kept telling me to be quiet.
I mean, it's only been
since
Friday.
So it took about a month and a half for me to come out with an extensive public statement.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, the guy gets fired on Friday, escorted off the job with cops. Like, maybe he's drinking all weekend. You know what I mean? Like, how...
Wait a minute. She's just joking.
I'm just saying, yeah. Like, you know, you just got fired. Like, who knows what you do the weekend after you get fired after working somewhere since 2005.
No, I can tell
like,
you this.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe he's just not, you know...
I can tell you this. As the guy in the room most recently fired of anyone, when I was fired, it was like a shock.
You weren't accessible for like days afterwards.
Well, wait. Okay.
I couldn't reach you for like 2 or 3 days.
Okay.
You weren't answering texts or calls or anything? Yeah, you were overwhelmed by questions?
Questions. Everybody's calling. But I have to point this out. My kids every year have a big party. All right, and they come back into Chicago. They're all grown, but they come back to Chicago. All their friends converge in my house. So there's like hundreds of millennials in my house. The day after I was fired, I had to open the door and let them all in. And every single one of them are like, "Oh man, I'm really sorry to hear. You know, hug me and feel." So it's tough. You get fired. There's a lot of emotions that you have, and there's a lot. You go through this process. It's like there's anger, there's denial. You just go through all these different emotions. So I can understand why he would not want to just.
Yeah, and maybe he's contemplating a lawsuit. Like maybe, you know what I mean? Like maybe he's got lawyers advising him too. It could be all kinds of. I mean, it's been like 3 days, so.
I remember Troy, the press conference you did have when you finally went public with it. It was at a restaurant in Wishbone, wasn't it?
Yep, Wishbone in Lakeview.
Yeah, it was a Wishbone on Lincoln Avenue, and I remember it very clearly. It was like every reporter in town came, and
yeah, that was fun.
So, listen, I don't know the man, Bill McCaffrey. I do not. I don't believe I've ever met him. I may find an email from him, but I don't know, man. I just find whatever he did, I wonder how bad it could be in contrast to his boss claiming 2 homeowner exemptions and then saying, oh, it was a mistake. Come on, man, you're a lawyer. Yeah. Oh, God, he made the mistake.
It's going to come out eventually.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, Maya, I know you won't be here next week, correct?
Or the week after.
Wow. Dang. No one told me about the week after.
No,
huh?
I told you about the week after.
Oh, I don't remember. Anyway, well, have a great Merry Christmas and Happy New Year
too.
And all those good things. And but we will be here next Tuesday, right, Dee?
Absolutely. And thanks for the non-weed cookies.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And maybe give one to Troy before we leave. We have some delicious cookies that Maya made.
Oh, cool.
All right. We're going to let Maya leave.
I can't turn a cookie down.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Neither can I. And we'll take a break and be right back with Troy.
Are you all the same cookie?
Mm-hmm.
With Troy LaRabia. I'll be right back.
Did you know that 40% of the people in Illinois opt to be cremated? Well, it's true. And Chicagoland Cremation Options honors their wishes by providing cremation services directly to the general public. Chicagoland Cremation Options provides an affordable, ethical, and easy cremation arrangement, whether in person or online. Save thousands and streamline the process by going directly to Chicagoland Cremation Options. It's a family-owned business operated by my good friend, Douglas Klein. Here's how you reach them. ChicagolandCremationOptions.com. One more time. ChicagolandCremationOptions.com.
It's Chicagoland's adult entertainment playground. It's the world-famous Admiral Theater, 3940 West Lawrence Avenue. The Admiral is homegrown from Chicago, and it's the most conveniently located club in all of the city. 15 minutes from the O'Hare Airport in downtown Chicago Loop. Voted Chicago's best strip club, the Admiral has showgirls galore and a variety of adult entertainment shows. The world-famous Admiral Theater, open every day from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m., 3940 West Lawrence Avenue. For events, showtime, and other information, visit AdmiralX.com. Must be 18 years of age or older to enter.
The Ben Jarofsky Show is supported by Northwestern University's part-time master's program in literature and liberal studies. Students learn from dynamic and diverse faculty as they build advanced skills for critical analysis, writing, and research. Evening classes are held on Northwestern's Evanston and Chicago campuses. The spring quarter application deadline is January 15th. Learn more at sps.northwestern.edu/masters.
How did you go from sharing stories over the years to deciding to write a book?
Good question, Mayor. Good question.
Madam Secretary, you talk a lot about the mothers of your friends, where you went to their houses and you knew that they were going to be kind and generous and supportive of you. So that theme of women being present and how they make a difference, talk a little bit about that and how that, again, animated some of the selections that you made of people in the book.
That's a great question, Mayor, because I wanted to include women who I could distinctly remember the impact that they had on me. And, you know, obviously historical figures. I never knew Helen Keller or Anne Frank or Maria Tolchev or Amelia Earhart, but as a little girl, they made a big impression on me.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.